Welcome, travelers. We're aware that your journey was difficult, but prepare to have your questions answered, for you have been granted an audience with the Masters of Modern.
And welcome back to Masters of Modern. I am your host, Alex Kessler, here with my co-host, Ben Bateman.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the show. Welcome back. We're here. We're talking. It's Thanksgiving week. You guys are maybe even hearing this like on Thanksgiving. So happy Thanksgiving.
Yeah. Yeah. It's Turkey Day.
Yeah, I mean, this will come out, and people don't always listen right away. So you'll probably be in your holiday. You'll probably be half asleep, lying down, very full of what's the thing that's in a turkey? Triglyceride? No, that's not in a turkey.
Isn't that what's like in
bombs?
Bombs? Nitroglycerin is what you're thinking. You're thinking of tryptophan.
Tryptophan.
Yes. Neither of the thing. The first thing you said isn't a thing, I guess. Nitroglycerin is what's in bombs, yep. And tryptophan is what's in turkey.
Don't you feel like
don't eat the first one, eat the second one.
Don't you think that tryptophan could be something that like Steven Seagal had to like get out of a lair in like a 1992 movie?
The tryptophan mines are
yes,
too high.
Yes, exactly.
Get the bomb right now.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's definitely possible.
All right. Fair enough. There's our tangent. Welcome to the show, guys. Welcome to the Masters of Modern podcast.
So speaking of Thanksgiving, we are going to talk today about how we are ungrateful for all the reprints and how we think modern is too expensive, but maybe not.
Yeah, exactly.
That's today's episode.
Modern's at an all-time. It's actually at an all-time low.
Yeah, it's most inexpensive modern has ever been. Right off the back of the modern PPTQs. It's not like having a modern deck is irrelevant at this point. We are not currently in modern season, and we are currently at the lowest point Magic generally gets to because of the Christmas season.
Yep.
People are saving their money to buy people gifts, and Magic singles aren't very good to buy gifts for because. I don't know if you've ever had to try and get your mom to buy you a Magic card you want specifically for your birthday or Christmas, but I have never been successful at it. That's not true. Once I was, but I think she once bought – I wanted a playset of four
– Wasteland.
Not Wasteland. Sinkholes.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, Mom, get me 4X Sinkholes at this website. Here's the link. And instead of buying me four of the least expensive version, she bought – one of the 4X, the one that had four available at the store. So it was labeled 4X Sinkhole. And that was the foil promo. And at that point, it was like way too expensive. And I luckily caught it because they sent me an email and I like called them. I was like, no, wait.
That's so funny.
Channel Viraval was very nice. They helped out. They canceled the order and my mom redid it and it worked out.
That's adorable.
The new plan was my plan generally. And if you want to do this for Christmas, create an account on Channel Viraval or another, you know, your favorite card store.
Fill your cart.
Fill your cart with your login and then give your login to your parents.
Yeah, it's a good move.
Though now I think something that Magic is doing really well, and maybe we'll do this is again a tangent, but it's Magic related, is they've seemed to have focused this time around on creating multiple things that would be good to give as gifts for Christmas.
Right.
So like the From the Vault set coming out before Christmas makes total sense to me, and I don't understand why they never did this before.
Right.
Because that's like a semi-expensive item, but I would if my parents bought me From the Vault...
Transform,
I would be all about it. I'd be very, very thankful of it. Versus, and before that was kind of the spot, and we talked about this before when the Commander set came out, this is kind of where Commander decks used to live, where those are also really good gifts to get someone for Christmas in Magic Land. But this they also have the new game that's coming out. There's like there's Rivals of Ixalan, I think is a like multiplayer variant that is coming out next week. And there's Iconic Masters and there's a box of Unglued. So there's a lot of really different, wacky, giftable stuff coming out for Magic. So maybe that is really with the intent of having a cool Magic Thanksgiving moment. So that's maybe the point of what's going on there.
Yeah, so with that in mind, there's quite a bit to talk about in today's episode. We are going to talk about Modern and why the prices are at an all-time low. We're going to talk about the release of Iconic Masters and how strange of a promotion strategy it was. We're going to kind of break that down and some other things. But before we do, I want to remind everybody here, there's a couple of quick shout-outs. We'll try to rattle through them here. I know you guys probably just want the content, but follow us on Twitter. That's the first one. There was a poll. We put a poll up about this, and we had 3,000 votes.
Yeah.
So you get to see real hard data if you go and follow the Twitter, which is at the MMCast. Alex, where can the folks find you?
I'm at Kess Wiley.
You guys can find me at Ben Bateman Media. We have a Facebook group that has been growing at a crazy rate. I think it's like almost 2,500 people now. So that's exciting.
Yeah, 25 people. And Kesco, the company that I started, and we make board games and spring summer toys, and we'll be promoting the spring summer toys soon, and that's in February. But right now, we came out with our first game. It's called Super Party Battle, and it's basically just Magic meets King's Cup. You're playing party games and recruiting different like students on a college campus to throw a party, and there's, you know, ones that they get bonuses and +1/+1 if you're doing a robot dance, or there's another one where when you cast that, when you bring that guy to the party, everyone draws two cards and discards cards unless they sing a song. You know, there's like different cool, fun combos that you do, and I highly recommend it. It's at thinkgeek.com. You can find it in the little goobly-doo, the part on the podcast description. And definitely check that out. Buy it. Play it.
I'm not one to play goofy games that aren't just Magic and competitive formats, but I played this and I really enjoyed it. And I had a good time.
Good. I would say that getting you to play a game that isn't competitive Magic has been one of the more difficult things. I don't think I've ever been successful. I think I brought you to a werewolf game with like Ruben Bressler and like multiple
Alexander
Pro Tour champions.
And like,
and you like in the first round just like hated it and were like, I'm a werewolf. And then they killed you. And then you were like, I'm going to go talk and eat chips in the corner.
By myself.
Can't handle it. So definitely check that out. Make sure to check out 10 Minutes of Modern. It's every day on the Anchor, Ben's Anchor station that I sometimes show up on. And it's really great. It's growing really quickly.
It's technically the official Anchor station of this podcast. We only talk about Modern.
It's not technically. It is.
Yeah, well, you just said Ben's station. It's not really just my station.
Well, I mean, but like you're like
I run it. Yeah. But yeah, for sure. So, but yeah, it's Modern content every single day. It's available on the app. I've been pretty good now every few days of taking the last two or three days of content, turning them into individual podcasts and putting them up. So there's a solid month of backlog now. And
that you can get on the iTunes podcast store.
On any of the iTunes places. Anchor just keeps making their stuff more and more readily available. It's a growing app, actually. They got $12 million in investment pretty recently, so they're just going to keep blowing up, and you guys are going to keep hearing about it, so it's a good time to jump on. Also, there's a contest, which we talked to you guys about last week, and my goodness, was the response crazy. The stipulation was you had to download the app and call in with your favorite card. We got almost 500 call-ins in like 3 days. Crazy. People were really excited because we're giving away Foil Snapcaster, Foil Liliana of the Veil, Foil Scalding Tarn, and Foil Tarmogoyf each Friday in December leading up to Christmas. And the deal is all of the participation in call-ins are going to be leading up to December 1st. So you have to do it in November to be entered in. But the reason I bring it up is because we mentioned the Facebook group. We also have a Patreon, which is how we bought this recording gear we're talking to you guys on right now.
We bought a camera.
Yep.
So we're going to start both. We got one camera from the Patreon, and then my company is buying a second camera, so we'll be able to do some dual camera action.
There's going to be some video content upcoming.
So we're going to do video content. So just, you know, we really appreciate it. It's very helpful. It makes it so we can make this podcast happen.
So the deal was that if you called in and subscribed to the station, you had to do one of the other three things as well. One of them was join the Facebook group. One of them was donate a minimum of $1 to the Patreon, and the other was leave an iTunes review. And just a quick reminder to anybody who did call in, you have to do one of the other three things. If you just download the app, it doesn't work. So when I call your name to win a Snapcaster Mage, if I find out at that point that you haven't done the thing, you won't qualify. So make sure you do one of the other three things, unless you already have, which is great.
Right. And something that we added to the Patreon, for a while we had this thing called a swag box, and the problem we ran into it with is that we're not creative enough to come out with cool items that were affordable enough to be able to give away that were related to the podcast, related to Magic in any way. So we changed it. It's now just you get it. It's for $30, so it's less expensive, and you just get a random Kess, which is the toy company that we're making, and the games that come with it, random thing from that. So if you want to get Super Party Battle, that could be something you get, or we're getting these cool balls and fans and other toys that are being sent out. So that's another available option.
And other games that are being designed that are really cool.
So, get ready. Kickstarter February 2018.
And the very last and final shout out, guys, is that collectit.company is where you can find this podcast and also where you can find the Command Zone. That's our sister podcast, Jimmy Wong, Josh Lee Kwai. They also have a show called Game Nights that they do. They work with us at the Coast on, which is really cool. And it's a great show. So check that out. Check out their YouTube channel.
Sweet. All right. Now let's talk about Modern.
Let's talk about it.
They've reprinted a lot of cards over the last 6 years. In fact, there's now what I feel, and when you look at Iconic Masters, I think there's multiple factors going into Iconic Masters being a weird kind of reprint moment. But, you know, there's an argument to be that there's a little bit of also just fatigue. You know, this is the second Master set this year. So this is the first time we've had two Masters set in 1 year.
Was Eternal Masters this year?
Modern Masters 3 was this year.
Eternal was last year.
Yeah, last year. So we now have almost six different Masters sets. This is two in 1 year. And I feel like, and you know, the word on the street is that the draft format is fine. It's nothing special, but it's not. It's a fun format to play. It's kind of a weirdly branded product. So who is Iconic Masters really for? You know, Modern had a direct play. Eternal went for Commander and Legacy players. So there's not like a direct market that Iconic is advertising to. And then last but not least, they spoiled the whole set almost 2 months in advance at an event in a weird way, and there wasn't the normal buildup that people are used to, so the hype train kind of feels like it didn't exist. Like, I know a lot of people that didn't know Iconic Masters was coming out until it was literally on their doorstep.
Yeah, definitely a weird decision. It was one of those things where the way they advertised it when they announced it in the first place was that we're going to spoil this whole set, and it's going to be at this anniversary weekend, and the only way you can see the set right when it comes out is to play at the event, right? Well, the weird thing about that was, because that they had never done that before, once it did come out that weekend, you kind of felt like it wasn't a real Magic set. Like, almost like you guys just did like a special set of reprints that you were only making available to this one group. That by the time it actually came out and was available, it just didn't feel like a real Magic set. It didn't have the... It's something about, we've just gotten so conditioned now to expect the spoiler season, when the cards release, and the pre-release and everything. Like, Iconic Masters felt like it had kind of come and gone in some ways by the time it even released. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
The spoiler season had been such a long time ago, and everything had happened, that by the time the cards were available, it was like...
Well, there wasn't even really a spoiler season, because people got to play with the card they wanted to do, which is cool. Like, on the other hand, like, I appreciate Wizards trying new things, and they want to do new stuff. And, like, and I'd much rather Wizards attempt exciting different ways of showing us new content than doing the same thing forever. So the fact that they tried doing a mystery box where you don't get to know what's in the set and you get the drafted at HasCon, which is this big event, and then that's kind of how they release the product, is cool. I think the big mistake here was not releasing the product 2 weeks after that event.
Right. I mean, because by the time it actually came out, it felt like a set that had already been out.
Yeah. I kind of forgot my hype and excitement about the set coming out already.
I was like relatively unclear when Iconic Masters was actually coming out.
Mm-hmm. And now, especially because Unglued spoilers are happening too. So like, I was very reticent to buy. I bought one box of Iconic Masters because I'm doing a big draftathon this weekend during the Thanksgiving break. I was a little worried. Like, I kind of don't want to buy it. I wish I didn't to some extent, because I want to buy a bunch of Unstable.
You just want the lands.
No, I want to draft a ton of Unstable. That format looks amazing, and I wouldn't mind making like actual constructed Unstable decks in that format, because I think they've done really cool creative stuff. It looks like Future Sight 2. So like, there's a reason, you know, I'm more excited about that, partly because we're in the middle of spoiler season for that. Every day, cool new cards get shown up. X was released yesterday, and he's sweet. I get to put him into your hand and cast cards from your hand.
X, what's that?
He's one of the spies. He's a blue-black legend.
Is the sneak card Legend of Sneak or whatever?
No, it's just X is his name. And so what you do is you can put him in the play. He's a 2/2 for two, and you can pay X some amount of mana, and it puts it in your opponent's hand.
Oh.
And for 5 mana... It reveals their hand, and for 5 mana, you can cast a card from their hand for free.
Okay, that sounds fun.
Yeah, so it's like a wacky card, but it's like cool. So like, I think the timing of when Iconic Masters came out this time around seemed like a mistake. And I don't know if you want to come out at HasCon, because that's also when Rivals of Ixalan is coming out. So when do they really time this correctly?
Yeah, definitely was a weird choice. So whatever, though. It was a cool idea. I was glad that Wizards tried something new and interesting. I think the more notable thing to point out here is what you said, which is there's a fatigue. If you look at the modern price history, I think there was a sense that some people had that, you know what, like, there's no way the depreciation ever lasts, because it just always has always rebounded. But there's a statistic I heard people talking about where Mero on Drive to Work was talking about there's been a downturn in player base.
No, that's a vague misconception, because he clarified it later. So his post said that there are 12 million active Magic players, and classically the statistic is 20 million is what they've said in the past, but what he clarified was that there are 20 million Magic players, and that statistic actually hasn't gone down. If anything, it's gone up a little bit, because of that's why they're releasing so much new product, and Magic is the gaming division is the one growth division in Hasbro,
right?
But the 12 million number is the active Magic players. So those are the people going to card stores. Those are the people that are actively playing versus like the 8 million on top of that that are like kids or in and out people or people that just like draft once a month. Like there's a different level of, or once a month is maybe too much, but like play casually.
Yeah.
There's an 8 million casual crowd and then there's a 12 million beyond that.
I wonder how many... I feel like I have to feel like there's more than 20 million players. They've been saying a number around 20 million, upwards of 20 million for years. And yeah, but anyway.
20 million is a lot of people.
A lot of people. So
most cities don't have 20 million people in them.
So that being said, this idea that we would never see a long-term depreciation to modern prices was really fueled by the fact that after the fifth reprint set, the prices had stayed pretty consistent.
I don't know if that's true. I mean... Like, so a Saffron Oliver, and we're going to be talking about this as we get into it more and more, did a recent kind of breakdown of the price of Modern. And if you take the top 12 decks, in 2015, the average price of the top 12 decks in Modern was $1,000. Now it's $800. So, like, that's a 20% reduction, which is pretty significant when you really look at it. Now, you know, we'll get into the poll in a second that we did on Twitter, the poll's basic response is that it's still too expensive, which is fine. And the professor, I have some quotes from him that we'll establish from Tulare Community College.
Yeah.
But if you really want to look at it, it's less expensive. And it's funny to me when people are complaining about too many reprint sets because – and how it's made Modern – you know, and maybe it's not made it Modern cheap enough, but like 5 years ago – people are just like, why aren't there more reprint sets? Reprint every card. Why did this set not come with all of these cards reprinted in it? And now there's this complaint of reprint fatigue, which is frustrating, I would imagine.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, what do you want? Do you want more sets that are reprinting cards? I think the best answer I saw, though, was I think they need to up the print runs of some of these master sets.
Oh, you think so?
And maybe lower the SRP.
Okay, so you think that they need to lower the print run and
raise the imprint, increase the print run, lower the SRP.
But wouldn't that no? I don't think that's a good idea. I think that just floods the market, makes it even worse.
When you say it's worse, what do you mean? Because right now the world is arguing that it's still too expensive.
But I don't. So I understand that that's the opinion. The opinion by and large is that it's too expensive. But
I don't know, you're making me the one that has to argue that it needs to be cheaper. Okay, go.
I don't think like Modern getting cheaper doesn't make Magic better. Modern getting cheaper makes Standard worse. And Standard is the format that people need to be able to play. Standard is the format that people need to be able to buy into if they want to get into Magic. Like Modern is an expert level format, so it should take time. Should take time to be able to afford getting into Modern. And also, there are cheaper options in Modern if you want to get into it, if you want to do it for a budget and you're committed to it.
There's also a buy-in moment where if you had bought Affinity when Modern started and you love playing Affinity, you bought Affinity... In 2015 was $700. So say it was $700 when maybe $600 when the format started. For $600, you've now had a deck for 6 years.
Well, and that's the thing. It's like, all right, so people are complaining that it's still too expensive, but let's be honest here. Just because Tarmogoyf's not as good of a card right now as it used to be, you can buy Tarmogoyf's online for $54 right now.
Right.
That card was $185 at one point in Modern.
And that was a serious barrier of entry for multiple really sweet decks because Tarmogoyf was kind of the classic card that let shored up your weaknesses. So Beer Burning Cocoa, a great example, where Tarmogoyf for a long time was just, my deck is good because I sometimes just have Tarmogoyf on turn two.
Right.
And can just win that way. And now that is an available option to many people. Death Shadow, which is arguably a better version of Tarmogoyf almost, is significantly cheaper than Tarmogoyf. It's like a $12 card.
Yeah.
So like there's no the real complaint, I think, is that just the next Modern Master set just needs to reprint the Fetchlands again.
I think
that's where everyone is kind of like...
Even the Fetchlands. So back up off that for a second. Okay, Scalding Tarn is $57. You can buy a Scalding Tarn for $57. You can buy a Verdant Catacombs for $37. Arid Mesa is $30. And then Misty and the... Misty and Arid Mesa? Did I say Arid Mesa? red, white, and blue green you can get for under $30. You so get a playset online for $100.
I think people's complaint is that you shouldn't have to spend $200 on a playset of anything in Modern. That's what I think people want Modern to be at. Or anything you're required to have a playset of. This is, I'm now quoting Twitter and what people have said. So, like, from that perspective, that's not ridiculous. I mean, that, you know, 60 cards, if your deck needs 60 cards in them and each one's going to cost you $50, that's really expensive.
Right
now,
off?
That's not true, but your mana base, the mana base being such a huge barrier to entry to everyone, being less expensive is probably a net gain for Modern if you keep the other staples more expensive.
I would say, right offhand, just off memory, the 10 most expensive cards in Modern-ish are Scalding Tarn, Tarmogoyf, Snapcaster Mage, Liliana of the Veil, Chalice of the Void, Engineered Explosives, Noble Hierarch, Cavern of Souls, maybe like Through the Breach, and Karn or something like that. Like, I feel like that's probably ish. I might be off by like a card or two. I just got like pretty like down the list, where I don't think that you're going to be playing more than two or at the most three of those cards in a deck with as playsets. I legitimately don't think that Modern is too expensive right now. I think the fact that most of those cards I just named, so let's just take the four, like let's just take four of them. Scalding Tarn at its peak was $110. It's $57 right now. Tarmogoyf at its peak, $185. It's $54.
Sure.
Liliana of the Veil at its peak, $110. That card's expensive. It's like $58, $60. Snapcaster Mage right now is almost as high as it's ever been, and it's not even $50.
So for the price of the average price of a top 12 Modern deck, I can buy a Nintendo Switch and four games.
Because the average price is $700?
Yeah, $800.
Okay, if you were to cut out the top two decks, I wonder how much cheaper it gets.
I don't have the way to do that math, so thanks a bunch. Burn is 500. I can go through the ones listed in Saffron's article, because you can find this article. We'll link it in the page. It's on mtggoldfish.com. Saffron Oliver does great content. Let me go through. Affinity is at 600-700.
Yep.
Burn is at 500.
Okay.
Tron is at 600.
Yep.
Jund is at 1600.
Yeah, that's expensive.
And I don't have Storm or any of the other ones. So
Storm's
so,
not that expensive, I can tell you right.
Right, because Storm doesn't, you don't need fetch lands in Storm. So that's kind of the point, is that you can get down to $500, $600 if you cut out some of maybe the top ends of that, if you take out outliers.
Yeah.
Even then, you can buy a Nintendo Switch in two games. And those two games are Mario Odyssey and Wind Waker, sorry, Breath of the Wild, which are the two best Nintendo games possibly ever.
Wait.
By the way, on a separate note, that's a ridiculous statement, and it might be true.
The which one?
Zelda Breath of the Wild.
Yeah.
The Nintendo Switch released four games, or like A-class titles this year. Two of them were Breath of the Wild for Zelda and Mario Odyssey. Both of them scored perfect 10s on every single review website.
They're that good.
They're like both considered two of the best games Nintendo has ever made, and they came out with two of them in a year. This is a weird tangent, but yeah.
Breath of the Wild's that good?
Yeah, it's insane. It's one of the best games I've ever played in my life.
Like, if somebody doesn't really play games anymore.
No,
like,
you'll love this game. Like, because you could just literally just do anything you want.
Really?
And it's like it's not like Skyrim where there's like you feel like there's just slog that you have to go through. You're just like, oh, I want to go shoot that thing. You just can go do that. Or like you see a mountain, you want to climb it, you can just go climb that mountain. And then there'll be like a dragon on top, or there'll be something on top of it cool.
And how do you win?
You have to collect four. There's like four temple beasts that you have to like climb up and get the thing and defeat it. And there's a boss, and then you have use those to make it easier to beat Ganon. And then you just beat Ganon because it's a Zelda game.
Sweet.
Yeah, it's good. I recommend this game to everyone. Also, Super Mario Odyssey is sweet. You get to be a T-Rex.
Cool.
He has a hat that he possesses people with. It's kind of messed up, but whatever.
All right, so back for a second.
Back to Magic. Now, but the point is it's annoying because I was the one on your side, but okay. Yeah.
You just did the thing again where you interrupted me with nothing to say.
No, I had a plan, but you
had my hand
you
up.
Raised your hand up, okay, and so I'm not letting you talk.
So the other reason that I think people need to chill about Modern getting cheaper than it is now is that if you did buy in at one point, you already have lost money on your cards. You probably have lost money on your cards. Not a huge amount, but you've probably lost 20 to 30% of your investment at this point. And that's just on their face value retail price,
sure,
not what you'd actually get trying to resell them. Now, that's not encouraging for people who want to buy into modern. If the idea is that with more reprint sets, the price will continue coming down. Modern's like golf. We always say that. If you bought your golf clubs and a year after you bought them, just golf in general was worth a lot less money, and you knew that if you ever wanted to sell them, you would not only lose 30% on your investment, but you would also just lose the fact that you'd be reselling used. Like, you don't want to buy into something that's expensive and know that what you're buying is eventually going to be worth half of what you paid for it. That's not a good feeling.
Well, in golf, that's true, period. It's not like there's resale value to golf clubs.
Yeah, okay, it's a bad example. But I think you understand my point.
I think there's an intent with Magic that one of the reasons things are expensive is because there's value to resell them.
Well, no, that's also that if you buy into Standard, you expect you're going to lose money on your cards, probably, because it's going to rotate. But that's sure. Why Standard is... You can buy into Standard by buying a box of cards for $100, and you can get a lot of what you need, and you can trade what you don't need, and probably for a few hundred dollars for
right now a standard deck,
yeah,
is around $400.
Okay, but like, here's the other thing.
which by the way, if you take out outliers, at least in this list that we're looking at, and you just look at the prices, and they're around $550 average here.
Yeah.
That's only $150 more than the two best and the most important two decks in Standard. So saying that Modern is too expensive when Standard is at the state that it's at, like classically when we did this poll, and I'm going to get to it eventually, most people answered Modern should be twice as expensive. A mid-tier good Modern deck should be twice as expensive as a mid-tier good Standard deck. And that's... We're better than that. We're currently only 20%, 40% above a Standard deck. And in that universe, you're pretty well off. Now, the difference is that a swing in Modern is much more worse for a player. So, for instance, I'm an Infect player. I invested in Infect. Now, it's kind of coming back. So, you know, Infect's doing some, some stuff right now.
It's a good deck, yeah.
But, there was a six month period where basically I was screwed because they banned cards out of my deck, and while printing terrible cards for my deck to exist in the format.
Right.
You know, if I am a tier one grinder, and there's an argument here where these people are fine, but if I'm the person who, like, I invested in Splinter Twin, banned out from under me, and then I was like, you know what? Okay, I'll ban. What's the next Pro Tour? The Pro Tour? Oh, this Eldrazi deck one. I'll just buy all the cards right now. Because I don't have a deck anymore.
Right.
Oh, this is the worst. Oh, my deck's banned. Okay. All right. Infect. Fine. I have a lot of the cards for that already. I'll buy Infect. Oh, now it's banned. Like,
right.
There is a player, me being one of them, that has invested consistently in just a good deck, and then those decks keep getting banned out from under me. Birthing Pod. I had Birthing Pod. I bought literally all the pieces to Storm on Modo 2 days because I was in Hong Kong. I remember this, and I had nothing to do in my hotel for the 7 days I was there. Because I was working. So I bought both Pyromancer Ascension Storm and the Kiln Fiend deck.
Sweet.
And then they banned Get Probe the next day, literally within 24 hours. So, you know, there is a level of – there's a frustration to players who have invested consistently into Modern and they keep having their deck banned from them. Mind you, Storm's back and is possibly the third best deck, if not the second, if not the first best deck in the format.
Yeah.
Infect is back. It's now once again in the top 10 – you know, keeps top-eighting SCG events. Not to mention, if I had Splinter Twin, if I had the cards for Splinter Twin, the most expensive cards in the deck, Snapcaster Mage, Scalding Tarn, are still two of the most played cards in the format. So that my real investment, if I had maybe if I put down and like found foil Splinter Twins and foil Deceiver Exarchs, and that right. was more expensive at that point, and now they're worthless, I think I'm fine.
I mean, I think the bottom line here is this.
Coco replaced Birthing Pod. Like, every deck that's had a card ban has had a replaced moment. Sorry.
The bottom line is this. Like, all right, you want to buy into Standard, it's going to cost you $400 for the best deck. And if you want to play a second-tier deck or just maybe one of the top few that's not the best deck, probably you can do it for $300. Like, in most Standard formats, that's about usually what you can do. There'll be the crazy expensive deck that plays all the Planeswalkers and fancy lands. But so here's the deal. In the world, I recognize that everybody's financial situation is completely different.
Sure.
And $300 can mean nothing to someone, and it can mean months of work for another person. But the bottom line is, if you set your sights and you say that I want to play standard and I'm going to spend $300 to buy into standard, and right now I have $0, how much time do I need to get $300? I'm going to set my sights on it, and it's going to take me a month or 2 months or 3 months, and I'm going to do it. And I'm going
to. But after 3 months trying to invest in standard, the deck changes or the format changes. So the deck you've been saving to buy into goes away.
So what I was going to say was, if it costs you $300 to buy into standard but $500 to buy into modern, I would feel so – if I had to work hard for that money to get into Magic, I would feel so much better buying into Modern than into Standard, because I know that in Standard I'm going to lose that money after 18 months.
Yeah, if you spend 3 months of trading, investing, and buying into Merfolk, Affinity, or if you have a higher budget, Jund or Grixis Control, you're going to be able to play with those cards for 5 years forward. Well, it took me 3 years to get my playset of Tarmogoyfs, and I bought them at the 120 price point, you know, or I traded for them. I think my first Tarmogoyf I opened from a box. The second one I got because a friend that we went to Comic-Con with opened it in a Modern Masters draft, but then couldn't pay for his hotel room that we were splitting, so he gave me the Tarmogoyf instead. So, like,
which now is like worth so much less than it was.
Yeah, but at the time it was worth more. And if I sold it, I could have gotten like it was it was Modern Masters 1, so it was still like $150. Yeah. So, like, you know, there's layers of. You know, it takes time to invest in that deck, but now that I have my playset of Tarmogoyfs, I can play Jund.
Right.
I can play Junk.
And that card could easily go back up in price. So my point is, just to wrap it up, to put a bow on it, was that I don't think we should want to see Modern drop that much further than where it is now, because if you do, it really starts to devalue the stable economy, the secondary economy that Magic has supported for so long. And if that secondary economy starts to be that wild, where you can see a drop in something that is 100%, mm-hmm. Like, something can go down that far. I mean, not 100%. That's the incorrect term. But, like, if you can expect to see something drop that much, then the faith that people have to buy into it really, really, really plummets. And it actually makes the long-term idea of this Magic being this thing that you can trust just goes away.
Right.
And I don't think it's good for the game.
The other thing to remember is the purpose of Modern more than anything is to allow – the reason Wizards it supports Eternal formats – And Modern exists because of the reserved list issue. So, you know, the problem with Legacy being what Modern was is that there was a lock on prices because of the reserved list that made it an unaffordable format for most people. Modern exists to provide value for rotating cards from Standard. Modern exists as a format. The purpose that Wizards did it was to create a format so that me spending money on my standard list every year and it rotating, there's a life for my cards after that. There's a reason for me to keep buying into cards and standard, because Wizards doesn't make money on Modern. The place they make money on, and we want Wizards to make money. That's, I think, another like contention that a lot of people have. A lot of people pointing at Fantasy Flight, because they're really successful with their living card games where you can buy every single card just straight retail. And Fantasy Flight is not nearly as successful as Wizards and doesn't come out with the same level of kind of attention that Wizards does per product. Think about how much Magic stuff coming out this year. That happens. Think about the fact that we're now going to a world where they're going to recreate 3 to 4 worlds a year. We're going to Dominaria next year. We're going to Ixalan this year. We're getting a core set. We're getting, you know, all of this attention and effort and this story team that they're hiring comes from the fact that they're successful and they're selling as much as they do, and they do that in Standard. That's the place that Modern, they make the most money, is because they need to sell packs. And the reason Modern exists is to make it so by me investing into Standard or me buying packs or me drafting, the money I spend there can lead to me having a Modern collection. Chandra, the 4-mana Chandra that has 4 abilities, that's a Modern staple.
Yep.
You know, me having that card is good. The new green Merfolk, will if I get a playset of all of those plus some Coppolas, that puts me XYZ closer to making Modern Merfolk. If I even invest in the tribal land that came out, because the counter ability part of that is not that important. You know, there's a layer of... they want a format to exist that allows your cards to have a home after it rotates out of Standard. And Standard needs to be a way it does, and there's issues with Standard, as we know. But the point of it is for Modern to have value. They want your cards to be valuable in Modern. And if the Modern is less expensive than what it's at right now, that loses it. That goes away. And I don't think it's ever going to be too inexpensive, just because of the fact that the point of this format is for people to put money into to hold. You know, it's kind of the blue chip stock area. So you want people to be able to say, it took me 10 weeks to invest in this Modern deck, but then it's mine forever.
Right.
this doesn't go away. I get to keep playing it. And yes, bans happen, and yes, formats shift, and that'll just always be an issue. But even if you invested in a deck that is now worse because of the format changing, something like Counter Company that like just hasn't done super well recently, that deck is still something you can play at an FNM. That deck is still something you can play against friends and be competitive. It's not like you're getting smoked by decks. It's just it's the 5% it needs to win a GP is slightly less than it used to be. Same as Infect, same as Burn, same as Goblins, same as Smallpox. Like, there's all these decks out there that you can invest in and have fun with. And that's what Modern's purpose is.
Right. And I think, I mean, there's a lot of factors that you can look at if you really want to try to figure out is what's the health of Modern's, you know, of Modern's buy-in. Like, and I think it's no better evidence than something like Path to Exile, which right now, Modern Master 17 Path to Exile is $7. Like, it's $7. That card's been $7 for I can't even tell you how long.
Sure.
It's been between $7 and $11 through every single reprint. If that can hold price, like, then we're doing okay. It's when a card, like, I bought two copies of Horizon Canopy over the summer for tournaments, and I spent $60 and $70 on them. It's $31 right now. Now, it's the first time the card's seen a reprinting in Iconic Masters, and generally speaking, the trend on this sort of thing is that right at the reprint time, prices drop about 30 to 40%, and they raise back up over the course of the next 6 months.
Sure.
That a year from now, any of the cards that have just seen their first reprinting, or even second reprinting, will go back up to close to what they were, and sometimes more, even
though
more
to
than
give
they
you,
were.
Just to give you a little bad news,
yeah.
Iconic Masters is at Walmart and Target.
So it's being overprinted.
It's not overprinted, but it's printed at a level that it's at Walmart and Target.
Yeah, it's not good for my Horizon.
Which is
bad.
Good
decision.
For what we're talking about, but it, you know, or good to make the format maybe that a little bit cheaper. I think, and I'm going to read off the poll now because I think do that now before we get into things. So 3,000 people voted in this poll, which is insane. 51% said it was way too expensive.
Way too expensive.
Way too expensive. 37% said it was slightly expensive,
okay.
Which I think is like probably the 10% said it's in a good spot, and 2% said it's underpriced.
Those people are trolls. they're all me from different accounts.
So, but I think there's an argument to be made if you get rid of underpriced and slightly expensive in a good spot are relatively comparable. I think those are people that are just like. We're vaguely happy with it. It could be slightly less expensive. It maybe isn't a good spot. I would say it's 51% to 47%.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're
now. You could argue that it's 88% people think it's too expensive to 10% think it's not. But it feels like we're in a good spot.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think that this is. My argument is just that I don't think it needs to get cheaper. My argument is I think this should be the floor. This should be as low as we watch Modern get. And like I said, it's evidenced by things like Path to Exile. Or you look at like just the price of most of the staples that have been around that people play with like a pretty high consistency that have seen a number of reprintings. Those to me are the cards that really determine. So Reman's $5. It's a $5 card. I think it was over 10 at one point.
It was 18 at one point.
Yeah, that's too high. You don't want your uncommons to be $18,
sure.
Not your four of uncommons.
Right.
But it's not a $1 card. Mm-hmm. It's $5, which means if you need to be able to buy a playset of these, you're going to spend $20 right now. Like,
right.
That's acceptable.
And I think there's an argument to be made that Modern should... you said this is the floor. I think this should just be where it's... I think floor is a strong word because that means it's too low. Like this is the bottom. I think this is a safe-ish place for it to be. I kind of fall within the 37%, where I think if I could do one thing, it would just reprint Zendikar Fetchlands consistently. Like
I don't think it's necessary. You're literally talking about two of them. One's 57, one's 37, and the rest of them are $30 or less.
Yeah, but it's a barrier to entry for the format. Like they did that to Shox. Like Shocklands got printed into the ground, which is good for Modern. I would say Modern is in a better place because they reprinted Shocklands into the ground. And I think if they did the same thing for Fetchlands, I mean, like, there's a whole argument that Fetchlands should be banned, and that has much more to do with gameplay, I think, than pricing. And a lot of people respond positively to that because of pricing, and I think that's the wrong reason to ban something. But I think that from a price perspective, reprinting them to the point where you can afford them, because that's like, That way anyone can build any mana base they want if they want to. And you keep the lands like Horizon Canopy. You keep the more expensive lands. You can keep some of those wackier ones more expensive, to be totally honest. But having fetch lands and shock lands be cheap, and so that you can always build your mana base, and then your cute ways of interacting with that mana base are what costs you a little bit more money, maybe, seems like a good idea. I think not Horizon Canopy.
Grow with the Burn Wells?
Nope.
What's the card you're talking about here?
Tribal Land.
Cavern of Souls.
Cavern of Souls. I think Cavern of Souls should also be cheap. I think that's the other one I think is like a huge barrier to entry to people, and it's a barrier to entry for kind of all of the cheap decks. If Cavern of Souls was cheap, then I don't think anyone would ever complain about the price of Modern, because you could buy into Merfolk, you can buy into Goblins, you can buy into Elves, you can buy into Humans, you could buy into Slivers, you can buy into all of these different tribal decks. That is what the entry point to a format should be. I think a monocolor entry deck, you know, monocolor tribal deck is a great place for new players to go to. They're easier to build. It's easy to understand what you're doing. It's a great place for beginners. And Cavern of Souls being a $50 card, I think, is a real barrier to entry to format. And so there's specific cards I would target, and they're really mana base dependent. And if we get those to be less expensive, I think the rest of the format kind of fixes itself.
Okay, so I don't totally disagree, because if you start to compare the price of a Bloodstained Mire or of a Wooded Foothills to the price of a Scalding Tarn, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Like, you shouldn't have three different red-based fetch lands, and one of them is 60 and one of them is 18.
Right.
It doesn't make any sense. The ideal price, then, on a fetch land for you is what, $18?
$25.
You think that $100 for a place out of any fetch land,
I think, is a totally fine place to be.
And if you were going to play eight of them in a deck, that the fact that your mana base starts at $200,
that's fine.
And that's going to be the probably majority of the cost.
I think your mana base being $300. But the point is that with that $200 investment or $1,000 investment, I now can play any color combination I want in Modern. Offers a lot of strength to it. Plus, generally, you want, like, you could get away with three, three, and three, and you could have three Scalding Tarns. Say you're playing Jeskai, three Scalding Tarns, three Hollowed Fountains, which are like $12 to $15 each, and two Arid Mesas. That's a mana base. That's a fetch land mana base. That's going to be totally fine, and you don't really need more fetches than that, unless you're doing something specifically with those fetches.
So now let's talk about the future. Okay, we've talked a lot about the past. We've talked a lot about the right now.
Is it Triple Strike?
No.
What about Last Strike? Are those in the future? Because they're sick. Did you see them? They're cool.
Triple Strike? Last? Oh, from is that from?
It's from
your silly silver set.
Yeah. It's a total. Like, it's funny because this set definitely has Morrow's Tumblr helped make this set effects to it. Because Last Strike has always been something people have asked for. Trample on a spell.
Okay.
Spell Trample. And both of those are mechanics that, like, once they're printed here, feel like now they could make them, and they look great. I want Trample Bolt.
Okay, back to the top. So let's talk about the future.
I also want Infect Lightning Bolt. That'd be sick.
That would be sick. Kind of like with a Wither Lightning Bolt.
Yeah.
Puncture Bolt. Is that what it was called?
Is that a thing? Is that a card?
There was the Wither Lightning Bolt.
Oh, okay.
There was, I think it was called Puncture Bolt.
All right. Technically, I think it would be Shock.
Yeah, I think let's just Puncture Blast.
A red and
maybe?
A colorless for two infect damage.
Puncture Sounds Blast sick. Is one red, two colorless, instant puncture. It's three creature player with Wither.
Yeah, okay.
But you want it to have infect.
Well, if it's infect, it needs to be two mana.
Yeah, and it's
and
two,
it does two and
two
shocks.
For two.
Yeah, because Wither would be too strong, but
yeah, sweet. all right. So again, I want to talk about the future for a second.
Sure.
So if you're buying in right now. Let's pretend we look at Magic, we look at the price, and I looked at the prices of a lot of the top cards. I looked at where they peaked, all different places. There's not a consistent place that most of these cards have fallen off.
Most peaks come when they aren't printed in a Master set. Like Snapcaster Mage's highest point is when it wasn't reprinted in Modern Masters 2.
And it was close to $100. Liliana peaked at about $110, $120.
It's probably the same moment.
Scalding Tarn peaked right when like that March 2014 fetch peak when all the fetches went through the roof. There's a different place where each of these cards went, and a lot of the time it's because it didn't see a reprinting. Sometimes it's an artificial spike where a place like Star City raises their price on something by $20 and everybody acts accordingly. But my question is, currently we're seeing Modern and it's lower than it's ever been. The trend would be that after six Master sets over the course of 4 years, that another 2 years of this and Modern's going to be even cheaper, right? Because there's not that many Modern cards. They're not going to print staples at a higher rate in new sets that become unavailable to devalue the state of the format, right? Like there isn't enough cards that can get printed in standard that are not readily available that we're going to have more options that are hard to find. Really, we're dealing with this one pool of about 20 to 25 cards. So the question I ask you is, over the course of the next 2 years, is it smart to buy that mana base you're talking about right now? Is it smart to buy into Modern? Buy all the staples. Buy your $50 Tarmogoyfs. Buy your Snapcasters at 45. Buy all of your Misty Rainforest at 26. Like, is it smart to just buy a playset of everything that is somewhat ubiquitous in Modern right now? Or is it going to be cheaper a year from now?
Well, A, we get a Modern Pro Tour in 4 months.
Okay.
Less.
It's safe to assume that by February, everything that we're talking about will be at least 10% more expensive than it is now.
Correct, because the Modern Pro Tour will happen, and then immediately after that, Modern PPTQ season starts. Like, right now is the bottom of the market.
Yep.
Especially with Iconic Masters coming out right now. Now, that I believe there's another Master set coming out next year, so there'll be a second one of those. But for now, we know that Iconic Masters has lowered the price of the market. Plus, this is the cheapest time Magic is in general. So now is a time to buy Modern staples. And it really comes down to the question, Wizards is going to keep reprinting cards.
Yep.
That's going to keep happening. So the situation that Ben found himself this summer is always going to be happening. If you're like,
it's not going to stay $31. It'll go up to $50 probably.
Right. If you're looking at Scapeshift and you're like, oh man, I really want to buy it, but it has never been reprinted, it's super expensive, Scapeshift will be reprinted within the next 18 months. Period.
Right.
I will bet one copy of Super Party Metal on it. I'll bet a Scapeshift on it to you, sir, that it is reprinted in 18 months. And
okay.
Which is a lose-lose for me. and like, that's true of everything. You know, when a card looks like it hasn't been reprinted for a while, Wizards realizes that and is going to get it to market. The chances that Curse Catcher isn't in Rivals of Ixalan is so low. or reprinted in some other format soon. Like, the Jace Vryn's Prodigy reprint being in the Transform set was so likely, even though people thought it wasn't possible. It's like, these things are going to happen. So,
right.
So the real moral of the story is, if you're investing in Modern to have a investment collection, as true for all Magic things, don't do that.
Right.
Invest
don't
in the stock market. Get a 401k.
Yeah, for sure. Don't buy in right now because it's a good time financially because you think you'll make money.
Yeah.
Best case scenario, long term, if you bought right now and you wanted to resell 2 years from now, if you got every dollar you put in right now, that would be great because you don't usually get to buy
and
resell.
Which I think is more likely. I do think, like, every card you buy right now is going to be reprinted in the next 3 years.
So, okay. So then to just to, again, paraphrase or rephrase the question, there are some cards that we expect Wizards doesn't want to be expensive long-term that aren't lands. They're like cards like Chalice of the Void where long-term we probably think they don't want they don't want Engineered Explosives to be $55. They don't really want that.
Sure.
And you can expect long-term, because that's not a card that's played as a 4 of in tons of decks, and that's why it's expensive. It's expensive because it's played and
from
it's unavailable.
The Vault X.
You can expect that buying into that card right now, not a good idea. However, is it a smart idea to buy into a playset of Zendikar fetches? Because if you plan on playing Modern and Magic for a long time, you probably won't have a better opportunity to get those cards cheaper.
Yeah, I'm not sad that I own a playset of fetches, or my Tarmogoyfs are now, you know, I could buy them for 50 versus 150, or my Liliana's that I bought at 90 when they were in standard at 90,
because
or my Snapcasters.
You're not selling them.
Because I'm playing with them. Because the point of me owning them isn't to have a finance collection. It's because I want to be able to enter a tournament and be able to not only play the deck I want to play, but then supply two of my friends to the, especially you, supply them with cards that they would need to be able to play. You know, I have a list on my phone of thousands of pictures of just friends that I went to GPs with them holding the cards they borrowed from me, because I'm glad that I'm able to provide that service to them and the fact that I was able to play the deck I wanted to play. And that's why I'm investing in Modern. That's why, and my collection is larger than most people's, which it should be because I have a Modern podcast. But if you're planning to invest in Modern because you want to be able to play it and you want to have a full set of fetch lands because you want to be able to pick which deck you want to play depending on the environment, or you want to be able to switch between Grixis, Jund, and Junk depending on how you think the format's looking and what's going to be the best version of that deck, then go for it.
Yeah.
if you're doing it because you think this is a place to have a stable relationship with your finances, there's a real world side of finance that you should be focusing on.
It's also never, ever, ever, ever smart to spend money that you are nervous about spending on Magic cards.
Sure.
Because it's just, it's got a 25-year successful and stable secondary economy, but it's a card game.
Right.
Like, that is owned by Hasbro. And that's a company that is interested more than anything in aggressively making money for their portfolio of investors and their board. Like, it's not, they're not, the people that own Hasbro don't look and say, like, we want to see Snapcaster Mage at this price, but it's at this price. That's just not what they're paying attention to. That's not why they're in it.
They're looking at what is the best way to cultivate our player base so that we can consistently show profit and do well.
And they're interested in making more than they spend always. That's what it's about. So that's not going to – the value of your collection is not going to be on their radar.
It can't be also because there's legal reasons. So yeah. And that's not – what we're not saying is don't invest in Modern, because I think that's a little bit what it sounds like we're saying. What we're saying is that Modern is a stable place to put your money into if you're looking to play it.
Like, yes, agreed.
Like, if someone asked me, hey, I'm new to Magic, should I play Standard, Modern, or Legacy? I point at Modern 99% of the time. It's the reason we have a podcast about this format, because Standard is volatile, and half the time it's not fun. The other half of the time it's expensive, or the other half of the time, the amount of time that this person is going to need to take to invest into the deck they want to play, it rotates, or it's different, or the format makes it bad. You know, if you invested in Energy a year ago, great. I'm happy for you, but 99% of the time, that's not how the Magic Standard environment works. If you are a Legacy player, the problem with Legacy is just not enough people are playing it. Like, it's a $1,000 to $2,000 investment into the format, and you're not going to get to play it more than once a week, if you're lucky.
Yeah.
I don't think I know of a store in LA that fires 8-man Legacy tournaments once a week, and this is the second largest city in the country.
It's played less than it used to be.
But Modern, there are weekly Modern tournaments at every store I've ever been to. There's a Pro Tour. There's an entire season of PPTQs. There's consistently a way to find an outlet for Modern. And if I bought a deck tomorrow, I could play the deck forever.
Right. For sure.
There's not a single deck in Modern that I can think of that you can't go play at a GP right now, even ones that have bans. Amulet Titan, you can still play. Eggs, there are Eggs decks out there. Now, there are decks that I would avoid, being stuff like Eggs or Lantern or Storm in general, but Storm has survived 7 bannings. So, like, even the decks that are, like, ridiculous that they're still around have survived. Dredge is still a deck, pick a deck, invest in it that you love playing. Make sure you test it out beforehand. Make sure you like that deck. The proxying the deck up before you start investing in it is a smart move, and then slowly replacing your proxies with real cards, and just have fun with it. I mean, that's the point. That's why we play Magic, is to have fun and
play the Esper Mill deck that got 14th place at the SCG Baltimore Classic this last weekend.
Right, like, have fun, like, play weird decks. If you're not going to GPs regularly, which 99% of Magic players, of that 12 million active Magic players, I would bet 2 million of them at most play at GPs regularly.
I think the correct statistic is 10%. So if there's 20
our tournament grinders, but of that 10%, I bet like 1% is actually traveling to GPs regularly.
Yeah,
like 20, most Magic players that play at GPs are nearby.
Like 100,000 or less.
Right. So like, you can have a fun deck. You can have a fun Modern deck if you want to go that route. If you want to be a tier 1 deck and you just want to win, which I totally understand, they're Merfolk, Affinity, Jund, if you want to spend more money. Like, all these decks are something that once you buy into it, once you buy into Jund, you're set. They could ban or unban cards for the rest of time, and Jund will still be a deck you can take to a tournament. Jund is bad right now, and it's still top 16s and top 8s, GPs, and SCG events.
It's just a good deck.
Because
good cards.
It's 55% against everything. And sometimes junk will be better, so make sure to get your green-white lands. But, like,
right.
You're just always going to be safe. So, like, it's really... The difference between and really the last thing is the Nintendo Switch comparison, which I had an argument for, but then you put me in a position to argue for it. So I use that's from the professor. That's his quote. Is yes, a Nintendo Switch is less than a Modern deck, but a Nintendo Switch plus a Wii U is not. And I've had most of my Modern decks I've had longer than both of those Simpsons combined life cycle. Yes, a Nintendo Switch is less expensive than most Modern decks, but a Nintendo Switch plus 2 games that I'm done playing. I've beat Mario Odyssey and I've beat
Zelda
Breath of the Wild. And I still have to buy more games. That's 1 year of content. I have played Jund for 5 years straight. I have played Fish for 4 years. I've played Tron for three. Like, these are decks that I've had forever and have lasted me much longer than that those games have. And that's $50 every 6 months to be able to do that.
My argument would be you should buy into the modern lands now. That would be, like, base level, the thing I would say. At least, at the very least, buy into the ones that are $30 or less. Like, I mean, just...
Buy every $30 less fetch, Shockland, and buy four Cavernous Souls.
Yeah, like, it's if you don't want to spend $60 each on your Scalding Tarns, and you don't want to spend $42 on your Virgin Catacombs, I get it. Like, it does multiply. It's an extra almost $60 if you want to focus on those instead of the others. But, and I realize Arid Mesas are not played as much. I don't care. Buy your mesas, buy your marsh flats, and buy.
You know what the difference of quality of life is between having a Scalding Tarn or an Arid Mesa play in Jeskai? Because it's like 1%. There's like 1% of the time when you're playing against a Blood Moon and you need to be able to fetch a blue land versus a white one, that difference is really relevant. And like most of the time, it doesn't matter.
Yep. Yeah, that would be my vote. If you're thinking about what to do and you're looking at the prices, do it now. Like it's worth it.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you only have a little bit of money to spend, buy two each of three of them.
Yeah.
Like, that's the thing. It's just worth it. They're cheap. The price of a Flooded Strand right now is $15. The price of a Misty Rainforest is $26 or $28.
Yeah.
Like, that's crazy to me. One of those was in Standard kind of recently.
Misty Rainforest was a $100 card 3 years ago.
Yep.
2 years ago.
So
it's now a $28 card.
All it's going to take is one season where there's a teamer deck, or there's a
or in fact
more
wins
likely,
another GP,
or more likely than a teamer deck, it's going to take one Sultai season where there's a crazy good Sultai deck all of a sudden.
Well, Infect's blue green. I mean, like the reason Misty Reinforcement went down is Infect stopped being a deck, and it's back to being a deck. So
yeah.
Pay attention to that.
For sure.
All right. So.
Yeah.
Justice League.
Oh, God.
Favorite moment, least favorite moment, something you wish they did differently, something you wish they would keep doing.
Okay, so this is a spoiler review.
Yes, spoiler review of Justice League.
So thanks for listening to the show.
Yep.
If you don't want to hear about Justice League, you can turn off right now.
Make sure to follow us on Twitter, at TheMMCast. I'm at Kes Wiley.
At Ben Bateman Media.
Make sure to buy Super Party Battle at ThinkGeek.com right now. Go
if
buy
it.
You
saw Alex's eyebrows just now as he was doing it.
So many eyebrow raises.
Yeah.
I'm doing it now. You can hear it in my voice.
So that's the thing. And join the contest to get free modern staples on 10 Minutes of Modern. Join it, subscribe to the station, and call in with your favorite card, your name, and do one of the other three things we mentioned at the top of the show.
We'll love you extra much if you either buy Super Party Battle, donate to the Patreon, or submit in the ways needed on the contest.
We're just giving away free modern cards.
Yeah.
It costs nothing. So get in on the action. Justice League.
So Justice League. So favorite moment, least favorite moment, thing you would change, thing you wish they did more of.
Give me 1 second here just to think about it. Just put all my ducks in a row.
Okay. We didn't plan this. I'm just – it's surprising, but the amount of times me and Ben actually see a relevant recent movie at the same time is lower than I've always expected. Like, you still haven't watched all of Stranger Things, right?
That's not a movie.
But, like, it's a cultural zeitgeist moment. Yeah,
I don't have that.
You haven't watched last season of Game of Thrones.
Nope.
Yeah. So
that's
like,
more surprising.
Yeah.
But
so here we are.
Yes.
Both having seen Justice League and both relatively disappointed.
Yeah. Yeah. I was less disappointed than you. But
I don't know if that's true. I wasn't disappointed. I thought it was going to be bad and it was decent.
Favorite moment in Justice League was when Superman shows up at the end and hits Steppenwolf. And the reason is because it was a big fist pump moment of like, man, this guy is strong and powerful, and like he's so hard to beat. And we even have Diana. We even have a god who's just like trying to fight this guy, and they can't take him down. And then Superman shows up, and you're like, yes, Superman's stronger than everyone. He's the best. That's what he is. I'm so glad Superman's here because he's going to save the day because he's Superman. And they saved that moment till like very late in the movie, and that was great. That was probably my single favorite moment in the whole movie.
My favorite moment was when they resurrect Superman. Spoilers.
Uh-huh.
And they're all fighting him, and they're all kind of getting their ass beat. And then the Flash comes in. And at this point, the Flash has never seen anything on the planet that lives in the universe that he lives in. And he's running at him to fight him, and then Superman just turns his head at the same speed that Flash is running at. And it's, like, vaguely terrifying, and it's definitely – that was an iconic moment from any movie ever. Like, that's something that hasn't really existed before.
Yeah,
you
right.
have this moment where a person who has existed on a plane of reality that is so much above everything else, and he's facing a thing that is a god for all intents and purposes, and this thing is now at his level. And he's just like, oh, I can't handle this.
Yeah, that was really cool. I agree. I like that moment a lot.
All right, worst favorite.
Least favorite moment is probably... There's this, like, conversation that, like, Aquaman has with Amber Heard for a second underwater where, like, you're just watching and you're just like, what the hell is this? Like, this is one of those things where you guys needed to throw, like, way too much backstory and context to set up a future movie. And, like, why is Amber Heard in this? She's in this for, like, literally 3 minutes. I didn't understand what they were talking about, and it just seemed really melodramatic. I don't know. That just probably was the moment that I was just the most like, this is stupid to me.
I think my least favorite moment is probably the, like, it's kind of your favorite moment. I think how much of a win button Superman is in the final fight bothered me.
That he's just so much, he's just so, like,
he
good.
Just, like, it. The point of the Justice League coming together should be that they need each other to be able to beat a bad guy. Not one of them can defeat this thing on its own. And this movie does a lot to make it feel like, oh, no, just Superman could have beat if Superman was not dead in the beginning. And I guess they needed the Justice League to bring Superman back to life.
Yeah.
Though really you only needed Cyborg and the Flash. But the fight with Superman at the end, or the Superman showing up at the end and just being like, oh, I just win. Good luck. Like, if you watch the Justice League cartoon by Bruce Timm, the first Justice League episode is the White Martians show up and they invade Earth and they take over. Or the original Justice League, they fight against a thing that can take over people's minds. It's the giant starfish.
Right.
And those are villains that not any one of them could defeat. You know, the giant starfish can mind control Superman. So you need the whole team to be able to, A, get the mind-controlled Superman no longer mind-controlled so that they can fight the other mind-controlled people.
Right.
And Superman can't kill those people because they're real people. So there's, like, a limitation. The White Martians, there's an entire army that invaded the planet. So Superman can defeat one of or 1,000 of these Martian mechs, but they can't defeat all of them. Steppenwolf's one dude with three boxes, and, like, really all you needed was Cyborg and Superman, and you could have beat it no problem.
Right.
Because, like, you needed Cyborg to hack the mother boxes, and you needed Superman to pull them apart. And you needed Superman to punch what's-his-face until he's dead.
Just punch.
So from that perspective, that's my least favorite thing.
That's fair. That's a fair thing.
Yeah. What's the thing you wish they did more of and they keep doing?
Gal Gadot being Wonder Woman.
Yeah, I can agree with that.
And Ray Fisher as Cyborg. I liked him a lot.
This is the tail end of this movie, and I have a very love-hate relationship with Superman, apparently. I liked how likable Superman was. I think my second least favorite thing is when he, like, it's annoying because my favorite moment is that Flash moment, but no kid who watches this movie isn't terrified of Superman forever.
Yeah, he's really scary when he comes back to life.
When he comes back to life, he's scary. And the last three movies, he's not fun. He's not likable. He's a mopey lion.
I, like, legitimately feel like, I still feel like the only Superman thing so far in this entire universe we needed was the second and third trailers to Man of Steel. They're like, the second trailer, Man of Steel, is so good. It's, like, such a good trailer. And the third trailer is also really good. But the second trailer to Man of Steel, the one that starts with the Gladiator music at the beginning and Diane Lane being like, listen to the sound of my voice. Make the world small.
This whole movie universe is so weird because it's Zack Snyder. It started off of Man of Steel, and Man of Steel is Zack Snyder making a Zack Snyder movie in the universe of Christopher Nolan's Batman.
Yeah, right. He's trying.
And neither of those styles mesh at all in the first place because Christopher Nolan is, like, hyper real. What is Batman like if the world exists? And Zack Snyder is Watchmen in 300, where everything is this glorified slow-mo, super CGI, the clouds are dark and misty, and then explosions make everything red world. And so, like, those don't go together.
Right.
And if you add the layers of just DC and Warner Brothers just consistently chasing after trying to make people happy. And if you talk to any artist or any person who's made art, their general statement is if you try making art for your fans or for the reviewers, you're never going to make good content. You have to make art that you think is good and then hope people like it, because you're always just going to be chasing people. You're not going to make anyone happy if you try making people happy. It's kind of, you have to do the thing that you think will be good and then people will like it. And you can see that where, like, Man of Steel, then they did it with Batman vs. Superman, and then Batman vs. Superman was the mess it was, and then in the middle of editing Suicide Squad, they decided to make a hard veer away from what Batman vs. Superman was trying to be, which was like a super serious all the time, no funny thing, and so they like transferred it from a serious dark movie to a comedy, and it ruined the movie and made it awful. I think Suicide Squad's the worst DCU universe movie, and then you get into... Then Wonder Woman, like, lucks out and ends up being, like, this gem. And they're like, okay, we need to change it to be more like that and funny. Yeah. So let's change Batman vs. Superman to that and or Justice League to that. And then, like, it just makes the whole thing kind of a mess. So,
I agreed. I would say it's worth seeing. It's fun. I didn't hate it. I liked it, actually. I thought it was above average. It has a lot of dumb stuff. On the subject of Man of Steel, by the way, on Action Movie Anatomy last week, we did a review of Man of Steel. We actually had my friend Sam Levine, who is a competitor in the Schmodown, and was Neil in Freaks and Geeks. I don't know if any of you guys watch Freaks and Geeks, but he's one of the main characters. He was on as our guest, and we talk about Man of Steel, and we do a whole breakdown. So go find that on the Popcorn Talk Network, or you can listen to it as a podcast, Action Movie Anatomy. But those are my thoughts, and we talk a lot about
Thank you
Superman
for your
in this
attention.
World.
See you later.
Yeah. So anyway, guys, I think that's going to wrap it up. That's a long show today. Thanks for listening.
Thanks, everybody. We love you. We'll talk to you next week.
We'll talk to you guys next week.
Bye. Super Party Battle!
Thank you for your attention. See you later, alligator.